Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your host, Connor Reynolds. Today, we have a special guest, no JP, unfortunately no JP, but we do have somebody that does know of JP and somebody that has worked alongside JP as myself. And so today, I'm very excited to announce Mr. Cole Thomas. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Really quick, before we get into too much of it, what is a little bit of what you do? What is a little bit about your background? And what is your specialties?
So I'm the lead pitching and throwing trainer over at Fast Performance. I just handle pitching of all sorts, train guys how to throw harder, stay healthier, and then depending on the time of the year, we go into some pitch design and, you know, control work, just being better overall pitchers. The pitching game in Colorado is a little weak sometimes, depending on what class we bring in. So try to elevate that as much as we can. Very much similar to you, Connor. I'm a Colorado kid through, grew up here until we both went to college and slummed it up elsewhere and learned about how nice it is out in Kansas. And in my case, Nebraska was part of my journey as well. Played college in Kansas, played college in Nebraska, then came back home, wanted to do some pro stuff like everybody else does, and just got into the coaching side and the training side, and it's where I am now.
Hell yeah, man. When did that transition look to start to happen for you, going from the aspirations of wanting it to be you to you wanting to be the one who teaches the kids that go on and play pro ball?
So I feel like for me, at least, I always wanted to be a coach of some type, however the career progressed, no matter what. Like, we probably started high school basketball. We would do like youth camps. That's where I kind of really found it, the passion for coaching. But for me, the real transition probably happened 2018, 2019. It's where I kind of went on full time at Fast, and just kind of like I don't know. I kept hearing all the horror stories of all my buddies playing indie ball and minor league ball, and I'm just like, I don't know if that's for me. too much bullshit, and I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this thing, but
oh hell yeah, baby.
A little too much bullshit, a little too much politics, a little too much, like, I'm going to work my ass off for little to no money whatsoever. I'm just like, yeah, I like doing this anyway, so stick with it. Yeah. And it's worked out ever since, so.
And so for you, what has been, you would say, the big transition from you actually and honestly feeling like, oh, like, was there a time where you gave like a cue to a kid, hits a PR, and like the face just lights up? Or like what was the moment where you're like, this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm gonna kind of dive deep into?
I'd say it's probably about that, yeah, that 2018 region where
was there a moment or anything like that, or was it just kind of like, yeah, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, I think never. It was never a specific moment. It was just, that's what I wanted to do. And I was always fascinated with how to improve baseball players, how to improve the game, how to, you know, one of those things. Like, were you and I growing up, we felt like we were very scratching the surface on player development. We weren't there, and there was something more. Something they weren't telling us, out of sheer ignorance or out of just, it's all I know. And this goes to the ignorance part, or they just like, I'm holding back some information. And so that's always been my thing. It's like, I don't want to hold back information on guys. And I feel there's a bigger and better way of doing things that no one ever really taught us how to do. Right. Yep. And so my standpoint's always been, I want to give athletes, baseball players, baseball pitchers, all the opportunity to all the technology, all the information that I never got in high school or never got in college, because that's just not what was taught. You look in today's game, you know, for you, it's, you know, utilizing hit tracks. For us, it's utilizing the TrackMan and things like that. It's like, I would have loved to know what my spin rate was on my fastball or my curveball or my slider or whatever. You know, when you and I were coming up, it was almost like everyone looked at, like, you asked how hard you threw. Like, if you were pitching, like, the coach would give you, like, a sideways look and go, like, don't you worry about that.
Throw strikes. Or,
yeah, just throw strikes, and that'll take care of itself. But then you go and you sit there and wonder, like, why am I not getting the looks that I feel like I deserve? I pitch really well and all that, but I'm not getting any scholarship offers, or I'm not getting the looks from the schools I want to get looked at. You know, like, for me, my schools were – I always wanted to go to OU or Alabama or something because I always grew up being fans of those schools. But I never got those. I'm like, well, why is that? And then you go like, oh, well, if I'm only a senior in high school throwing 85-ish, whatever it was, I never knew because I was never consistently gunned. You know, that was when I, that's when it kind of was like, you know, I feel like kids should know how that works, and kids right. should know, should have access to this information, because then they know where they stack up amongst their peers, right? You know, how can I be a better baseball player if I don't know what I should probably be, what I should weigh in at, right? How strong should I be? How, you know, it was when we were playing, there was a lot of just general ignorance because we only played guys that we played against.
Yep.
Right. Like for me, I was in the Douglas County area, you know, so there's always good talent in the Douglas County area. Right, of all your Douglas counties, your Castle Views, your Highlands Ranch,
always
legend. That's all I really had to stack myself up against was those guys, right? And even then, there was like one good player on every two or three good players on every team in that league, right? It's not a good sample size to know where you stand in terms of the entire country or even the entire state for that matter,
right?
And so that was kind of my moment. Just like I'm like we can do this so much better than what we had. And there's the added use of social media that was never there. And there was the, you know, and everything's taken to such an extreme now where there's showcases everywhere. And you know, like, I feel like the showcase ball is, I feel like it's on the outs. It's always going to be there, but I feel like the reliance on showcase ball is hopefully falling away, because a lot of it's just a money grab at that point.
And to combo it a little bit with what you were saying is how you said the social media is getting a lot more relevant now rather than on the recruiting side of when we were getting recruited. And then also when we were getting recruited, the idea of, like you said, the radar gun and asking and wanting to know that information wasn't there. And if you're in Colorado, there is two Division Ones. One is Northern Colorado. The other is Air Force. Then mm-hmm. you have multiple Division Twos, and then like you have Colorado Mesa, Metro, Mines.
You've got the colleges.
And then that's it, though. So like, unless yeah. you're having, I mean, a few JUCO, sorry guys, but like, unless you're having the coaching staff of the local colleges consistently coming to look at you, because you're not getting the information out to them via social media or like really anything else. You can't really tell them about anything that you're doing because you don't have the numbers to back it up. So that means that they have to come physically watch you and make sure that you have a good outing. Let's say you don't get to pitch that time, or let's say you do and it's not a great one, or B, they never come and see you. You're not going to get the looks and it doesn't work right out.
Well, in that, but I mean, I remember from the standpoint as well, it's like, you know, you talk about like they have to come watch you, right? And how many kids are there that are just like you, if not a little bit better, right? How many guys are like that? You know, you have very limited resource as a Division II for sure. I know. I mean, UNC is one of those, they're Division I by name only. I mean, hopefully this new coaching.
Hopefully Mike Anderson, we'll see. I'm looking forward to it.
I heard some rumors about some money that might be coming in because of Mike going there. But that's one of the things like that. You know, you have very limited resources, especially at the Division II level, right? You've got to be able to travel. I mean, you have six people on your staff, maybe at most. And that's like a top line figure. Most schools, especially in the RMACs, are four people deep. There's a head coach, two assistants, and usually like a grad assistant.
Yep.
And you've got to hopefully – you've got to hope of all the tournaments and all the games on every weekend or every day in the summer that they just kind of happen to stumble across you and you happen to just play the best game of your life that exact day.
And you're whereas the position now, that they're looking for too.
Yeah, and be what they're looking for, right? But whereas now, like what I was going to say was in our day and era, you know, you would email a coach and they ask you how hard you throw, but no coach had ever told you how hard you throw. So you kind of just had to guess, right? There's no worse look, I feel like, in the world. I mean, there's way worse looks, but like in baseball at least, to tell a coach you throw a velocity that you're kind of estimating and not be anywhere near that.
Oh.
Right. And same thing, like, you know, obviously exit velocity was not that big a deal when we were in high school and all that. No one really thought about it as a specific number, but it's like, how hard can you hit the ball? And then you go into your tryout or your showcase thing or whatever, you're not anywhere near that, right?
Yep.
Which, that's what I was like, why don't I know this information? Why don't I know how hard things are thrown? How much are they moving?
Especially with that being the first few questions that these coaches, it's not like you're, you know, five phone calls deep and you're like, oh, I don't know that. They're like, literally the first few questions that they're asking you. And if you can't answer it, gone.
Well, that's what always annoys me when I get into my little tizzies with people on Facebook on those baseball groups. Because I'll tell them, like, you know, here's what you need to be a Division I coach or a Division I player. And then all these, like, dad coaches going like, what about character? What about heart? I'm like, well, when I get a coach finally ask me like, hey, what's this kid's heart? In the first two or three questions when I talk to him, then I'll concern myself.
Right.
until that day, heart's awesome and competitiveness and being a good teammate's awesome, but it's not going to be the first thing people concern themselves with.
The thing that I don't think that they realize is that there are players that throw that hard or hit it that hard or weigh that much or move that fast that also have good character and also have good teammates. Like, it's not like your kid is the only kid that's ever been a good teammate. Oh, by the way, he's also batting .125 and he has a higher batting average than his weight. Like, that's a tough
one. Root has something I saw on social media and I like to use it all the time is Rudy didn't play for a reason.
That is good.
Right. I like that. I understand the whole story of the movie is being an awesome teammate and having an exceptional heart. But there's a reason he didn't play till the last two downs of the season.
And why it was such a big deal that he did.
Right, exactly.
I love it. And to start to transition into today's topic a little bit with just – you've got the dad coaches that think it's this way, or you got somebody else thinking it's this way. For you, with your athletes, when you were moving forward and going from summer into fall time, what is that kind of workload management that you're having some of your players doing? I mean, obviously, there's going to be a little difference of a kid that didn't pitch that many innings in the summer and is wanting to get more innings in the fall versus the verse of that, where you got a kid that threw, 95 innings and is wanting to take a time off. Like, if you could go through a couple different scenarios for you as the instructor over at FAST, what does that throwing program and workload management look like for your players?
So I put those guys usually into three different camps. There are three kind of buckets you can put guys into. We'll start with the big one. I think a lot of people like to think they are is like the Johnny All-Star, right? Johnny All-Star is the kid who pitches the most. He's the best pitcher on the team, gets the most amount of innings. And this generally like, all right, for his level, he's a stud player, right? You know, if he's a 13U, he's a 14U, he's really good at the 14U level. Right. For those guys it always depends on the innings, as you said. Like, if you're a pitcher and you go, if you're near 100 innings by this time of the year or by the end of August or whatever, for me, honestly, I would tell you the guy don't play in the fall, because every inning over 100 usually will increase your chances of getting hurt. Right. Because there's not a lot of downtime, there's not a lot of recovery time. If you just kind of keep constantly kind of banging away at your arm, at some point something's going to give,
Right.
So those are those, like, the your Johnny All-Stars, like your guy who leads the team in home runs, leads the team in strikeouts, leads the team in ERA. There's not a lot he can work on skill-wise at that level. You know, it's kind of almost unfair, unless he's just an egomaniac, to just be, I want to go strike out all these hitters, I want to go hit all the bombs. But how's he getting better at that rate, right? If he's going to play a competition that he's already better than, you know, there's a ceiling to how much higher you can attain playing below average talent for your level, right? And so those are the guys I would be saying, you know, unless you're going to play on a team that's older than you, like if you're 14, you're going to play on a 16U team where you might not get all the innings you want because you're not the best player on the team, but you're going to play better competition overall. Or you are, I would say, you would train. Like, you would just take maybe the month of September off, give yourself time to recuperate, maybe get in the weight room a lot more, get in, do a lot more mobility. And then when October rolls around, you know, then you get on a velocity program, or you get on, you know, October rolls around, we get on an on-ramping phase. November comes around, you get in velocity. December becomes a little more, it's mound velocity based. And then we go into all next year working on, you know, pitch design and throwing strikes with our brand new pitches, right? And this is a high school level, I would say. The second category is, how do I put this? Is the guy who fulfills a specific role and fulfills a specific type. So like your closer on your baseball team, right? So like, he's good. He's got a specific role, but he doesn't get a lot of innings, right? You're pitching in very unique situations, and you feel like, okay, I need to get more innings to get more experience. I'm fine with guys pitching, depending on how much time you have in between summer and fall. You know, maybe we take a week where we just throw a couple bullpens, one or two times a week. You can still maintain your throwing, but we're leaving our high level throwing down to a minimum. And then we, you know, get back to the fall and, you know, get to where we need to be, and we can be at a competitive level, right? And then my third category is you're a bench warmer, right? Like, this is like you're a bench warmer on your team, or like if you're in college, you're like a redshirt guy or something like that. And that's always an interesting category because you can kind of go both ways, right? You can be a training, you can have a training focus, or you can have a playing focus, right? Because you obviously should play because you need to get experience, but you should train because there's a reason you're not playing.
Yep.
Right. You need to develop certain skills to get yourself onto that roster or get yourself that playing time that you need that obviously you don't possess at this time. But at the same token, you need to play because you haven't garnered that experience. Right, so that's a very, really interesting rock and a hard place group that I love. It's always very fascinating to me. I would always tend toward training because if you're not playing, there's a reason you're not playing, right? You maybe don't have the velocity, or you don't have the stuff, or you don't swing well enough, or you don't make contact enough. That playing, if you don't have these traits, playing's not going to really help you.
Right.
I can't train. Playing's not going to help you gain velocity. Playing's not going to help you improve your curveball, or it's going to help you have greater feel for your changeup, right? You've got to train that, and you got to know, find out what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And the only way you do that is in the training lab on a TrackMan or a Rapsodo, or in your guys' case, like, you don't have a solid swing, you need to train to have a solid swing. You can't just play, and hopefully magically a smooth swing is going to appear, right? If you have exactly. No idea what you're doing.
No, it's the overlap of that, those ideas from like on the pitching side to the hitting side, extremely, extremely similar. And that's one of the things that a lot of, I feel, pitchers understand that, you know, if, like you said, if you're the ace going 100 innings in the summer, you know, probably don't need to be doing that much in the fall. Same thing goes for a lot of hitting guys. And because it's not as a common idea to think about, you know, how many swings am I taking? What is my, if I am training, what does that look like? If I'm not training, what does that look like? A lot of guys don't think on that side of everything. And so when you're going into on the hitting side of stuff, it's one of the reasons you were mentioning technology earlier. It's one of the reasons I love having like Blast Motion and HitTrax is being able just to, one of the nice things is see how many swings they took at the end of the night. Like how many swings, how many hits, how many like takes, like what did we do today? Without that, you know, you can kind of get lost in like, I think I hit like, you know, a couple buckets, and it's like, all right, well, like, are those buckets full? Like, are they empty?
Right.
Like, where is that at? And so to have that difference on that side, I've really enjoyed being able to just simply look at, you know, a little column and go from there. Is there anything that you guys are using to kind of monitor exactly how many throws? I mean, obviously TrackMan does that and stuff, but is there a way to track how many swings throws you guys are having in warmups and, you know, plyo throws and all of that kind of stuff?
So we utilize I don't utilize it as much as I probably should, just because we have a limited number of them. Like if this, we have a thing called Pulse,
which is from Driveline.
It's from Driveline. It's used to be Modus for guys who maybe aren't familiar with it, of what that Driveline's bought, and now it's Pulse. So it's an accelerometer that you put on your elbow, and it tracks your number of throws, your level of height, or your number of high level throws. Right. So that goes into your workload question a bit, where you can wear this little strap. It's kind of almost like a bicep band, right? And it'll track how many throws you make. It tracks how many high level throws you make. That way you can develop a throwing program just based on, okay, here's the day I threw, you know, 50% of the balls I threw yesterday were high level, right? High stress, high level. So today I'm going to throw, and I'm going to make sure I stay under whatever my threshold for, you know, high intensity throwing is, whether that's arm speed, arm stress. And that's what it tracks. It tracks elbow stress, just torques on your elbow and arm speed and things like that. I want to keep my arm under this arm speed. I want to keep the torque on my elbow under this level. That way I can know that, okay, I got my work done, but I kept it below a certain level that I'm not going to be unable to come back from it the next day.
So right? Is it almost like one of those, I know Trevor Bauer has talked about it, but one of those like ring things where it kind of calculates like recovery and like, but for the arm side of everything.
So
like workload management, or like, you know, this is how much effort you put out and stuff like that.
Yes. It monitors the workload you've put in, and it will recommend what your workload for the next day should be.
And so right. That workload suggestion, is that something that you as the lead thrower over at FAST, is that something when you are working with guys that do have it, is that like how do you communicate to them a plan for the following day? Is it just, you know, like, hey, this says 60 throws, like, you know, what do those 60 throws look like? How do you manage intent? And like you mentioned arm speed, like do you put a program for that together, or is that a conversation that you have at the very beginning with the athlete and saying like, hey, this is, you know, for you to kind of feel and figure out?
So Pulse, what's really good about Pulse is it's an automated system, right? So it'll say if I went out tomorrow over to Northfield High School, which is right by our facility, and I long tossed with one of our college guys, and I threw something like 100 balls, made 100 throws, you know, probably 30 to 40 of them were over 80 yards, right? 10, 20 of them maybe were 100 yards, right? Those are high-level throws for just about anybody, right? And so it will track, okay, here's what's great is you'll do a test with it as well, right? A long toss test. And here's what the torque was, or here's what the arm stress was at 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards, 40 yards, et cetera, right? And that way it knows, okay, here's where all the arm stresses are at this level, right? And it'll have the same thing with have a bullpen test, right? Here's what your arm stress on your fastball is, here's what you're on all your off speeds, your changeups, right? That way it gets a read on you, kind of like an Oura ring or a Whoop strap, which is what I wear, and things like that. Gets a sense of you, and that way he goes, okay, here's how many balls you threw at this level, which is like your top level, your 80% level, right? Now let's make sure we only have 2 to 3, maybe no more than 10 at that level, and keep everything down. And then the Pulse has a app that it uses, so that has an app that it uses. That way, you can have an interface of like, here's what my stress was on that throw. Here's what my RC was on that throw. So you can always be constantly tracking what every throw does to you.
Oh, that's awesome. Right?
It's really, really cool technology, especially when you get to understand it. It's very valuable for guys, very valuable for athletes, because then they can. It's really good. The guys we generally use it for are the guys who are coming off of injuries, like rehab assignments, guys who maybe had a TJ or a labrum tear or something like that, guys who are getting back into throwing, right? Because awesome. Those are the guys you've really got to monitor closely. But I would say that it's also a technology that, you know, it's kind of like a blast motion, right? Or it's kind of like, you know, blast motion is obviously the most easily to compare technology, right? It's like, why can't everybody have a Pulse? Why can't everybody have a blast motion, right? We get them for like $100 using our Driveline discount. You know, for $100, you can track every throw you possibly make. You get an outline. Yeah, you get an outline of all your throws were. That way, and you can always be constantly, okay, here's what my arm, here's the state of my arm. That way, I throw however many pitches in a bullpen. Okay, I need to really relax it today. I need to really go hard on the recovery. I need to keep my throws to a minimum that day. Maybe it might be the day I don't even need to pick up a baseball and throw it, because my arm's going to be just adding more stress to my arm is only going to hurt me, and it's going to take me a lot longer to recover back from it. So that's another way we track those kinds of things.
I like that. And so if Pulse is being able to put out a report and suggested workout load on the following day, when it is time for like recovery, is that something that you as the instructor then apply, or is that Pulse? Does Pulse then say like, hey, here are some recovery suggestions and stuff like that?
So that's a thing. The biggest thing with the recovery and the Pulse and how we utilize it is, all right, here's how many throws you need to have. How can we efficiently take advantage of all those throws you're allowed to have, right? So if it's on a recovery day from our standpoint, and you can only have maybe 30 to 40 throws in that day, how can we most efficiently take advantage of those throws? You know, maybe there we keep it to a limited amount of plyos, only the plyos that are very necessary, like arm path plyos, like a pivot pick or a roll in, done at a very low level. And then that gives us about 25 throws in the tank there. Like, okay, what are some things we can do to maximize our limited amount of throws for that day? And then after that becomes, all right, now let's just go hop on our recovery, you know, our band pull aparts, all of our mobility that we do on top of that. We just kind of make sure here's our throw threshold for that day, and let's work how we can maximize that.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. What has the transition been like for you over the last couple of years? How did you kind of put together this, you know, obviously with the Pulse, it makes it a lot easier. But how have you adjusted your plans after being doing this since about 2018, going from summer to fall over the past few years?
A lot of it just depends on how well guys take care of their own bodies and are responsible for themselves. You know, for guys who know how to take care of themselves, it's a very easy transition, right? You know, they make sure they... You know, any type of pain they feel, we make sure we can address that. The ones that are the worst, and I don't want to say the worst because it's kind of a mean way to put it, but like the ones who
comparing to everyone else,
say that again.
Compared to everyone else, they're just not the most ideal.
Right. It's the ones that like they come in for the summer, they're in for the summer, they're getting their weekly bullpen in or whatever we might be needing to work on while they're playing their games, and then just kind of go MIA in between that time, right? You know, whether it's a vacation, which I don't fault you for going on vacation, because usually that's out of your control. If your parents are like, we're gonna go on our 2-week vacation to, you know, you name it, right? And I get it, it's part before school, right? And a lot of it just depends on how self-sufficient you are, right? Like, how many kids have you had who will go on vacation and you're like, and it's almost one of the, I get annoyed because I'll lay out a plan for them. Like, here's a throwing plan while you're out wherever you are. You know, bring a glove, bring a baseball, bring a football for all I care.
Right.
Something. Right. And then you got, and they, or, you know, or like, you know, bring your batty if you can find batting cages or something you can do just to swing and maintain your, all the stuff we've already worked on.
Right.
And then they come back and like, oh, what'd you do? Did you do all the throwing? Like, no. I did the first day. And then I forgot my glove
when we left.
Right. Yeah, I forgot my glove, or I forgot my bat, or we just didn't have time and all that. And that's what I'm like. I tell guys, I'm like, just bring some J-bands. Damn it.
Something.
Like, J-bands will take you 20 minutes tops, you know, to make, if you can do J-bands, your J-bands for 20 minutes a day, do your J-bands for 20 minutes a day, and you'll cover most of your bases, yep. Right? And he's like, oh, I didn't have time. Like, how do you not have 20 minutes?
Really?
Yeah. Really? Like, you know, you do the 20 minutes before.
I saw your Instagram post. I saw the 10 different slides that we went through. Looks like right. You had time.
Right. Well, exactly. It's just like, it's exactly what I say. It's like those kids who will, you have to be the one to kick them in the ass to do something versus the kids who are, okay, I really care for this. I'm going to make sure I get my J-bands done, or I'm going to make sure that if I can throw and I have an opportunity to, I'm going to take advantage of it, right? And so those kids are are less than ideal from a load management standpoint, because if you've been going all summer, you're playing all summer, you're getting your bullpens done, you're doing all this stuff, and then you just shut it down for 2 weeks, then I have to make sure, then I'm like, all right, well, now I got to make sure to on-ramp you, or get you back to a level that we feel comfortable that you can go compete at a high level if you're playing in a fall season, right?
Yep.
But then no kid's going to come into you and go like, oh, I don't want to on-ramp again, right? It's like,
well,
yeah, I want to just go start doing bullpens. I just played all these.
Right.
I played all these games, a whole summer. You know, like, what? Right. I played a whole summer. I did all these bullpens. You know, what's 2 weeks going to hurt?
I know.
It's one of those things where I try to avoid getting guys to do that. It's because I'm like, you know, I don't want to be the guy just go fuck around and find out. Right.
That's like the worst case scenario.
Right. Because it's the one thing, I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah, it's not you actually getting hurt wouldn't prove my point. You getting hurt would just be a not great situation.
Right. It would prove my point, but do I want my point to be proven? No.
Not really.
And so workload for those guys is always miserable. And it's not from the standpoint of, oh, I have to do this. It's like, I can't believe it's getting the kid to buy into. Yep. I have to make sure I'm ready to pitch. I have to make sure everything's locked in, what we had fixed and what we had worked on prior to me going on this 2 weeks in hiatus. I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing. I mean, and pitching, I'm still of the belief, I don't know if you believe it at all or if that's something we disagree on, but to me at least, finding your swing again, or at least finding your basic swing mechanics, is a lot easier than finding your basic pitching mechanics.
Yep.
Because it's one of those things where, like, as much as there is to a swing, there's so much more technical things to a pitching motion that get lost very easily.
Now,
and if you don't do it for a specific amount of time, it's very easy to lose it, and you got to bring it back.
Now, I 100% agree. The thing that I would then say though is the opposite of that is that it takes hitters a longer time to get more game ready though.
Oh, right. Oh, for sure.
And so, like, yeah, as a hitter, I can, you know, operate at a, you know, 60% of my clip way quicker than I feel like a pitcher could go from 0 to 60%.
Right.
But that final, like, 40% or maybe, like, 20, like, however, into game ready you want to call it, Like as a hitter, that's the part that is tough. And
for sure.
And I think that's how, like you said, how easy it is to be able to pick up a bat. And if you're not quantifying a lot of different things, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between 60% capability and 75%. And so if you're just going through and you're like, well, I hit two buckets and, you know, the bat sounded really cool today. It was loud. You're like, oh, okay. Well, you just turned off the speakers and you're the only one in the, you know, the cage. So there was no, you're the only one hitting with the echo. But yep.
Right.
It's you hitting it harder, even though you're not. That idea for the hitting side is a lot easier to get into if you don't have those things. Where as a pitching, I feel like it's a lot easier to tell if you are, you know, at your game ready or not.
Right. Right. Like, it's far easier to tell if you're game ready, if everything's locked in, your fastball's where it needs to be. Whereas, yeah, from the hitting side, hitting off a tee or hitting off a machine is far different than hitting in game, you know, where something actually matters, right?
Mixing pitches and all that fun jazz.
But it's the same thing I tell guys all the time, and like why pitching is so much easier. Like why I hit it, even though I'm a pitching guy, I think hitting is the hardest thing in the world. Because pitching is, we're the offensive player, even though we're technically on defense, right? If you're a pitcher, any pitchers who listen to this later on, please be far more aggressive. Like, you're the one that's in control of the game. You know, like, you know, if you do your job well, you know, we're working to get you as hitters guessing. Yep. Once we get you guessing, we have you in our hands. The battle is basically done at that point.
Yep.
You know, you might get you'll get some lucky hits every once in a while. Once, if I get you thinking, if I get you thinking about three pitches that I can all throw for strikes, you're done. Like 90% of the war is done between you and me.
Yep.
Right. Now I've just got to execute. Right. So it's the thing. It's like being mechanically ready, hitting and pitching is totally different, but that being game ready is totally different between both.
100%. And the difference of the workload management, I feel, is very similar, but the timeline of the two, depending on what that workload management needs to be, is the tough part of everything about it. One of the differences that I fully believe is when you're going from the winter into the preseason or spring training or whatever it is, our high schools start around February. That's when they have their tryouts, is that right around there. And so for us, I want my hitters as game ready as possible. For me, that means we have to then start making it to where you're seeing game live hitting about, you know, 2 months, maybe a month and a half before the tryout at minimal, just so we can do that. And the part that sucks is, you know, pitchers are always so damn good at the beginning. They're so damn. They come out of, you know, December, and every pitcher's God's gift, and it's just, hitters look like so foolish. And it's like, yep. And so that means then we have to, as the hitting side, we have to start planning that, you know, before December. And so if you have a heavy fall, then we have to have a light, winter-ish a little bit, so we don't want to do too much. And then you go in, and it's just, there's so much going into it, and it's one of those things where I feel not a lot of people think about the transition from summer to fall and how much that actually does affect, you know, off season after that, or continuing to training into that.
Right. Well, and I think one of the biggest transitions that people don't get is, how do I transition based on the goals I'm trying to achieve, right? And this goes into the next, like, thing I was going to say, was like how we track our stats, right? You know, if you're a high level athlete, the guys we want to work with, you know, how do you track how well you do? Like, what's the standard of what you hold yourself to? And that's the thing. Like, you talked about, you know, live ABs. Naturally, live ABs for pitchers in the early spring, like at the tail end of winter, right before the season starts, you know, pitchers are going to be phenomenal, right? Because you're hitting indoors. You know, hitting indoors is always a nightmare because the lighting is always off, you know, somehow off, right? Hitters can never see the ball for whatever reason. Like, it's all, it's like all the depth perception's off and then, everything. Yeah. And pitchers just throw strikes, right? And then you're going to be successful. But that's where, from a pitching standpoint, and pitchers, and like, I can hold you to a high standard, but you've got to hold yourself to a higher standard too. Yep. Like, what was my actual strike percentage? What was my, how many times did I throw my off speed for a strike? How often was it competitive, right? Because if you're just, if every result's going to be either a strikeout or a walk, like, we're not really learning anything.
No, not at all. What for you are the more, you mentioned a couple right there. What are for you, for anyone listening, what are the statistics in that period of time that you are looking at? That, you know, obviously if a kid gets three strikeouts and three batters, but it was because the batter couldn't see the ball, that's a little different than, you know, other situations. So what are the main ones that you are looking for when you're texting a pitcher? Like, how'd you do today?
So easiest thing that I tell guys is, it's going to be the most basic. It's going to be the most basic stat. It's going to piss a lot of guys off because it's so cliche and all that. But it's that first pitch strike thing, right? First pitch strikes. Jason and I, my boss over at Fast, who I think you've had him on the show.
Yep.
I'm not sure. But like, we got. Actually. You what?
Reoccurring in person.
Oh, he's a recurring guest.
Yep.
He just comes on whenever you want him.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever we have.
Oh, yeah. We love whenever, Jason whenever, over here.
Whenever he's in Brighton, he's required to come over.
Most definitely. Whenever we have dinner.
What we did, we had this thing. We made key performance indicator charts for this last spring. So Jason's the pitching coach over at Mullen. I'm the pitching coach over at Bear Creek. Our schools are 8 minutes away apart from each other, but we're totally different leagues for whatever reason.
Makes a lot of sense.
We're both 5. But one of the things we worked on is create this KPI chart, and we prioritized, you know, how many hits did you give up, how many walks, how many strikeouts, how many hit batters, you know, and you give yourself varying levels of points depending on how important you think that stat is, right? But the biggest thing we had for all of our guys was win the first three pitches.
Yep.
Win the battle the first three pitches. Right? It's that first pitch strike. If you can get 67% first pitch strikes, you're usually going to be in a good spot, right? If you can, you know, in building on top of that first pitch strikes, if you can get to two strikes within the first three pitches, it's staggering. Like, you can look at it at the big league level. We have a chart in our facility right up on one of the boards. It's staggering how the numbers shift based on if you get to 0-2-1-2 versus 3-0-2-1.
Yep.
It's staggering how those numbers change, right? So that's one thing. It's one of those, you know, beyond just your standard box score of, you know, strikes, strikeouts, walks, hits given up, runs given up, earned runs given up. You know, what are those? It's one of those process things versus the results.
Yep.
Like, if you follow a process of constantly being ahead in the count, right? You know, more often than not, those are going to be the desired results, right? I mean, at Bear Creek, you know, whenever I did my KPI charts on all of our starters, it, you know, the games we won and the games we did really well, you know, on a pitching wise, from a pitching standpoint, what was the number one thing? We won the first three pitches far more than we lost them. On the games we lost and those games we shouldn't have lost, but we did, was when we lost the first three pitches more than anything else. We fell behind the counts, right? It's the same, but it's like what we talked about earlier. It's like, pitchers, while it seems odd because we're not on offense, we are the offensive player, right?
Have to,
you know,
attack.
If you put, exactly, just attack. It's one of those things, like, be attack a hitter. I don't care if you throw strikes all the time, but you at least have to be competitive, right? You know, if you can be competitive and put it in the umpire's hands, you know, and you become competitive. It's the same thing. Like, umpires will tell you this all the time. It's like, I will give the benefit of the doubt to the guy who's aggressive and competitive.
Yep.
You know, the guy who's spraying the ball all over the yard is not going to get the benefit of the doubt, even if it is a ball on the inner third of the plate, right? If it's a clear, obvious strike, he's not going to give you that.
Nope.
Right? So it just goes to show, be aggressive out from the offset. you know, get those first pitch strikes, get those hitters on their heels, and the umpire is going to become your best friend if you do that.
Oh yeah,
because umpires don't want to be there. Sometimes in those summer games when it's 100 degrees out and you're playing on a turf field, those umpires don't want to be there any more than you guys do.
No, not at all.
Right? They want to come in. They want to get there. I know the rates are higher, but when I was an umpire, we got like $35 a game.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, you know, just like $120 a game now.
I know. It's like, I want to come in, get my $120 for the 2 hours I'm here, and get the hell out.
Yep. And it's like, all right, we noticed that. And the focus of that and making it to where the pitcher knows and understands that, because that's a big thing that I've been having to work with a lot of our guys at the 16U level, is like going through and like exactly explaining that, like, let's use this dude behind the plate who sucks at his job or doesn't care about his job. Let's use him to our benefit. All right, catcher,
right.
I want you to, you know, let's set up about this far off a little bit. I don't want your body to move. If you can just hit him between the knees and make it look semi-decent, homeboy's going to call it. Let's just keep rolling right with it. And just little things of teaching the little parts of the game like that, and understanding winning the first three pitches and doing those little things are so important for these guys and gals to actually understand and to make actually a part of their game. Because the amount of times that a coach has, you know, yelled that or said that or whatever it is, like, it's not like this is rocket science or something brand new to them. It's just a matter of them applying it in high-pressure situations and going back to it. And that just takes a lot of training. That takes a lot, and that goes back to what you first originally said of, you know, if you're not playing, there is a reason. Go train and figure out why you're not playing. And that just gives us a little full 360, full circle of why it is extremely important to be able to understand the workload management and the training aspect of what you are needing individually, not what, you know, the other 11 guys on your team are needing. If you didn't play a single game in the summer, you probably shouldn't play with that same team in the fall. Maybe not that I'm saying that that's a bad coach or a bad team, just saying that there's a reason you didn't play. And so let's make it to where you have a chance next year to make that team and may actually contribute.
Well, you also need to make athletes need to be cognizant of, are these games that matter or are these games that don't?
Are these competitive or non-competitive?
Is it making me better and does it matter? Yep. Right. If it's not fulfilling both of those, I feel like it's not worth it. Right. I mean, I think the matters are different, but because you have to get better. Right. And I think summer ball and fall ball, like, I'm not a big fan of fall ball in the abstract. If you guys go on our Fast Baseball TikTok, you notice that all we talk about is stupid.
What's the shout out on that TikTok? What's the ad on that?
It's just Fast Baseball on the TikTok.
There you go, folks. You heard it.
But I mean, I'm sure I'm probably need to wrap up because we've been here doing this for I don't know how long. But you know, if you're gonna play fall, have a goal. Like, what is my goal in the fall? I feel too many guys play fall just for the sake of playing fall.
That's what their 11 buddies do.
Right. Yeah, I'm here with my buddies, right? I get to play with my friends. And if that's your goal and you want to have fun, go for it. More power to you. Right. But if you're a guy who wants to play the next level, you want to play in college, you want to play varsity, you want to be like a freshman playing on the varsity team or sophomore playing on the varsity team, right? Depending on where you go, there is a standard and a level that you need to reach. And if you're not at that level, you need to reevaluate your priorities.
100%.
Right. If the average varsity player on your programs throwing 82, you need to be at least 82. Right. If your average hitter on your varsity is hitting, you know, I don't like batting average as a particular but like if the average batting average is like 300, you need to be hitting better than 300.
Yep.
You know, if the average exit velocity on your team is 95, you need to be better than 95. Right. Cause that's what's going to put you at that level that you want to achieve. Right. Like, there's too many guys who come in, like, I want to play. We did an exit meeting a few years ago for a lot of our Bear Creek guys, and we asked them, like, what's your dream school? Like, Vandy. If you think you're going to go play at Vandy, you've got a lot of thinking to do and a lot of prioritizing you need to do, because you are not at – I mean, and don't get me wrong, if you're going to Vandy, you're going to play professional baseball at some point. You know, you're going to be, whether it's indie ball or major league baseball, yep, you're of a level, right? But you've got to be able to say, like, you know, my goal is to play at this level. Do I fulfill the basic level to play at that level? Do I meet the minimum requirements to play at that level? Do I throw hard enough? Do I have the right amount of stuff? Do I throw strikes consistently enough? Do I throw, like, am I, because to be a guy who goes to Vandy, you need to be usually one of the top baseball players in your state. Are you one of the top baseball players in your state? Then you need to reprioritize what your fall looks like, what your winter looks like.
And not just for one season either.
Yeah, not just for one season. It's got to be a sustained thing, right? But it goes back, like, who was I? Like, I know you do a good job of it. There's a friend of mine up in Fort Collins who runs a facility who does a good job of it. Where they just basically, Shay, or? Yeah, Shay. Yeah,
hey,
Shay.
Hey, we know Shay.
We know Shay. But Shay does it with his B&B sports training. When they run teams, is we go out of state. So I proved to them, guys, here's what you're competing against. Yep. Like you want to go play college baseball in Texas? Here's what the average Texas player looks like. Here's what the average high school player looks like in Texas. Here's what the average high school player in Arizona looks like. If you don't look like those guys, then playing fall ball is probably not in your best interest.
I love it. I love it.
So
I appreciate it. Do you have anything else on the top of the head right now?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground there. Damn. Oh, yeah.
I love
it. We gotta do this more. We just vent our grievances.
Hey, that's what we do here, baby. That's what we do here. A little special edition of Hit Chat Chit Chat. Mr. Cole, do you have any socials you'd like to plug?
You can follow me on Instagram at Cole Thomas Fast. Twitter, I'm not as prominent on Twitter as I probably should be. It's I think it's cthomas624. And you can just go on TikTok. I'm on TikTok all the time for fast baseball and stuff.
What's that Twitter one more time?
What?
What's the Twitter?
The Twitter is cthomas624, I believe. Yeah.
You have an egg as your avatar still too?
An egg? No, I have what's my profile? It's just a picture.
Are those like numbers with an actual meaningful sequence, or are those just random numbers that you put at the end of your name?
Oh, no. Well, 6 was like my first baseball number, and then 2-4 was like my basketball and baseball number in college.
Oh, okay. I got you. I was like,
no, they're not.
I don't use it that much.
I'm not your reply guy. I'm not a reply guy.
Nice.
I only reply to the good stuff, and I'll tweet every once in a while if I see something that needs to be tweeted about.
Hey, baby. I love it. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on, man. I definitely will have you on again. I'm looking forward to it. Next time we could probably have JP on as well.
Do you have recurring guest t-shirts like part of my take?
I need to get one, apparently, and I'm all for it. I'm more awesome. Than willing. I appreciate you, brother. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Day. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate it. You guys can find this and all of our other episodes under Hit Chat Chit Chat on Spotify and Apple. Video versions on Spotify and YouTube as well. So thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your day, and to next week.